Generations ago, girls were taught to set their future hopes on meeting a Prince Charming. That was the case with a woman named Cora.
I grew up in an era when happily ever after was the answer.
Marriage was the ticket to security and fulfillment.
You grew up and you got married to the man of your dreams and you lived happily ever after.
And if Prince Charming didn't end up making you happy, a woman needed to take matters into her own hands and get that prince to act the way she wanted him to act. Cora observed this growing up, too.
And my mother was very much in control, so that was the role model I had growing up.
Cora followed the example she saw growing up once she met her Prince Charming.
And consequently, I was married to a man for over 30 years that I pretty much controlled. And unfortunately, there are no do-overs. Because he's not with us anymore, and I'm not the woman I was when I was married to him. And I never got to be the chance to be the wife I wanted to be. So I urge all of you to listen to Nancy.
That's what we've been doing over the last several podcast episodes, listening to Nancy Lee DeMoss here on Revive Our Hearts. Nancy's been teaching point by point through the True Woman Manifesto in several series this year. This week, we've continued to look at the way God designed men and women.
Whether we are female or male is not an accident. It's not a matter of chance. It's not a mistake. It's a matter of God's design.
We've examined true virtue from the inside out.
And if you have virtuous behavior without having a virtuous heart, you know what you will turn out to be? A self-righteous Pharisee.
And we talked about giving men respect, creating a welcoming home environment.
Think about what it's like when you and your husband re-enter the house at the end of the day. Do you make re-entry for him a joy? Or do you make it a burden? Do you make him wish he'd stayed at work?
Some women have been listening to this series along with us, and they're sharing how this message is affecting them. In a few minutes, we'll hear how God spoke to a woman who had been in a homosexual lifestyle. But first, let's get back to Cora. She wishes she'd heard this material years ago.
And I never got to be the chance to be the wife I wanted to be. And I just thank God he's been in my life all the years that I wasn't walking with him. He never left. I did. And so consequently, I was able to come back and start becoming the person I needed, that he needed me to be. And I just thank God for that. I just want to say thank you.
Amen. Thank you, Cora. And what a reminder that we do have a gracious, redeeming God who is making all things new. And when you say there are no do-overs, that's true in a sense. But in another sense, we would have no hope if there were not the possibility of our whole life being a do-over. It's not me doing it over, but Christ giving me a whole new life and making us into new women. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't consequences and that there's not loss sustained. And I'm so thankful, by the way, that we have a combination of younger and older women here today and listening on the radio, because there are older women who are saying, if I could go back and do my life again, here's how I do it differently. And my hope is that some of the younger women are hearing and receiving this counsel. And our desire for you is that you will live your life in such a way that you will be able to have the kind of marriage and family. And if God calls you as a single woman, whatever it is, that you will be able to look back and say, by God's grace, I lived life for the glory of God. So these are wise words. And those of you who are older women and think that you can't mentor because you've blown it, sometimes it's out of how you've blown it that you do some of your most effective mentoring. And the things that God has taught you really are powerful when they're illustrated in a life message.
Our first guest, Cora, grew up in an era when women were encouraged to find Prince Charming and happily ever after. Our next guest grew up in a different era. She was told she didn't need Prince Charming at all.
But I do remember a time back in the 70s when some of you all were not even around, and I was going to college, and I was in the midst of, you know, we are women, we're going to do everything for ourselves and nobody else. And I was the first woman to be in sales at the radio station where I worked, which was something unusual down south. And I was raised by a single mom who wanted me to have everything out of life that I could get. Well, then I met Tom, and we were young and first married. We weren't thinking about those things. But as time went on and I got into my 30s and started to hit 40, I was 38, matter of fact, I had Virginia, Jenny, our third child. And although the Lord had been working on me many, 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 many years from the time I was 17 and I accepted him, I probably began walking closer to him and Tom as well when God gave us Jenny. Jenny was not expected. She was planned only by one, and that was the Lord. And once I found out I was pregnant with her, it began a journey of giving up things and going from that woman of the 70s, who I had been, part of the baby boomers, to becoming a wife and a mom and realizing that that was what God really wanted me to do. We think we have control here. We don't. God does. And by realizing that and relinquishing that, I was able to let go of a lot of things. I let go of worry. I don't know if any of you all are in single mother homes or anything like that, but when you are, you learn from your mother about worry. The Lord taught me not to worry through the pregnancy of that child, and he taught me not to worry about money. We went through a couple of things when I was pregnant where my husband gave up things he felt the Lord did not want him doing, and the Lord provided. He showed me grace. He showed me how to be a woman. And I did not realize until this ministry and going to the True Woman Conference just what God was preparing me for at that time. From forgiveness with my dad, a lot of things that we have a tendency, particularly as women, to hold on to. But if anybody's telling you now that to be a modern woman is the greatest thing in the world, no, it's not. The greatest thing in the world is to be a woman God has designed you to be. The idea of the feminist is still alive, and it's still alive in even Christian schools and with Christian girls. I teach, and I teach mainly little ones because the older ones scare me. They're bigger than I am. And I was subbing one day, and I was sitting in listening. Just there was a study hall, and the kids were talking, and the boys and the girls were talking, and they're seniors, and they're talking about what they want to do when they get into college. And they were going back and forth and back and forth. And this one young lady, she's very determined with what she wants to do. But at the same time, and she's a Christian, at the same time, she also was very determined that she was going to be a modern woman with what she wanted to do. And that if a guy wanted to marry her, he was going to have to take her name. She would not take his name. And this is a young girl who has grown up in a Christian school with Christian parents and Christian teachers. And I listened for a while and just listened. And, you know, when you're in the 12th grade or a senior in high school, you've figured out all life, okay? All life, every answer. And I just kind of sat back, and after it got quiet, I stood up and went in and I talked with the kids. And I said, you know, guys, you all are at a great time right now. You think you know everything and you've got the answers. But I can tell you now, you're at 18 and I am in my early 50s. I'm 50. How old are we? Two? Okay. And I can tell you now that what you do when you are younger and what you do later on can be two different things. You'll go through different periods of life. You know, and this one girl was like, well, you know, I know what I'm going to do and this, that, and the other. And I know, you know, we can do that. And I said, you know, God made us a certain way. I said, you may say you're going to do these things, but he has a way of grabbing your heart. And you'll go one direction in your life, and there'll be a time that he'll take you another one. And you'll ask yourself sometime, why did I make that decision? I did that. And not only that, I'm not doing what I was doing when I got out of college. I went to college. I got a degree in public relations and broadcasting, and I'm teaching school. They're two different things. I said, you're going to do many things. But it was just very interesting because we think as Christians that our girls are not influenced like that anymore. And they are. And I'm challenged with my two girls, particularly my youngest, to make sure that she doesn't think that way, that she realizes, you know, what God has got in store for her.
I wanted to say first to Cora, Proverbs 31:12 says she does her husband good all the days of her life. It doesn't say all the days of his life. So there is still opportunity to do your husband good, even though he's gone, because it's all the days of your life. So I would encourage you to speak highly of him, to never say anything that would be cutting of him, and just praise him to your family and friends, and do him good by the way you live your life now. So God can still give that opportunity, and that's something that I really like to share with women. And my mother-in-law was widowed for about 18 years, and she always did her husband good all the days of her life, and they had a lot of rough roads in their marriage, and she could have dwelt on those things, but she didn't, and so she really honored him for all the years that she was widowed. So I just want to encourage you to do that. But then the other thing, in the whole issue of respect, in respecting our husbands, but also respecting men, is our adult sons. And I have an adult son. He's 26. He's at Moody, studying for the ministry. And I was really convicted a few years ago that I needed to stop treating him like a child, and I needed to treat him as an adult and give him that same respect that I would show my husband or anyone, any other man. And then I have an 18-year-old son, just turned 18. He's still in high school. And so I'm trying to transition with Justin to stop treating him as a child, even though he's still in my home for another year, but to treat him as a man, because I want him to be a godly man, so I need to treat him like that and treat him with the same respect. And it's amazing to me when I share that with women in the churches we go into, I always have older ladies, older than me, come up to me afterwards and say, my son is 40 and I treat him like a child. And they're so convicted. And one lady came up and says, my son had to move back home with me, and I just realized the Holy Spirit just convicted me about how I speak to him and tell him to clean up this and pick up that like he was 12 and he's 40. And so I just wanted to add that to the whole topic of respecting men, to think about your adult sons.
We've talked about living in a culture where there's such confusion about gender, sexual identity, and the havoc that is wreaking in women, younger and older. And as we were talking about that, Renee, you just came to mind and are such a neat illustration of Renee now serving on our staff here at Revive Our Hearts, of how God has really changed radically your whole view of what it means to be a woman and sexuality. And just, I don't know what would be on your heart to share about that.
Well, I have actually been a believer for the last 3.5-4 years. The Lord radically changed my life, and I mean radically. It was basically overnight. I had been involved in the homosexual lifestyle for 11 years, and it absolutely broke my parents' heart, devastated them. I was raised in a Christian home, but yet walked away from the Lord, wanted nothing to do with that. I was very angry with the Lord because I felt like I was born that way. I didn't understand the conflict that I was having in my heart. Why do I feel this way, and yet this wasn't necessarily a choice I felt like that I was making, but in actuality it was, because I was taking my thought of who I was as a woman totally from the culture. I was not looking to God's word and opening up and saying, who am I? Lord, how do you see me? And my parents prayed for years that the Lord would bring me to the end of myself and that godly influence would come into my life and I would be receptive to that. It was a very, very hard process. I completely turned my back on my parents. I wanted nothing to do with them whatsoever. I embraced that lifestyle. I was basically a poster child for that lifestyle. The person that is in front of you today is not that girl at all. It's very easy almost. It's kind of scary that I can talk about it because it's like I'm talking about somebody who doesn't exist. I mean, I have no idea who that girl was. But I was just very confused. I was involved in athletics. I excelled as an athlete. I was recruited in college by almost every Division I school in the country. So I was a very successful athlete. And yet in that culture, that lifestyle is celebrated and glorified. I embraced that. I was somebody there, and I desperately needed an identity, and I found my identity there. I longed for acceptance. I excelled in the classroom, and I excelled in sports. And so it was very difficult for young men to talk with me, and I made it that way. I was very unapproachable. So therefore, I never knew how to form relationships with men, but it has just been amazing what the Lord has done in my life and how the Lord just, over a period of time, began to answer my parents' prayers. And I have so many women that would be on the, you know, on their knees for me for years at a time. And to now to know that I'm serving in this ministry, it's just absolutely amazing. Like I said, I was saved 4 years ago. I actually hired an assistant basketball coach. I was a college basketball coach, and I hired an assistant who was a Christian. My mother met this girl and immediately hugged her and said, "You're an answer to my prayers." And I'm like, "Mom, she's going to think you're psycho. Why are you going to do that?" And Mom had been praying for a godly influence to be a part of my life on a daily basis. Well, Callie was that for me. She was light and salt, and I so desperately wanted what she had. She had a foundation in the Lord. And regardless of the circumstance of her life, there was just this solid thing about Callie. And so we would just talk, and I wanted what she had. I really thought when I was in that lifestyle and being raised in a Christian, I thought I was a believer. I really did, but I had no relationship with the Lord whatsoever, no relationship. And it was just, I mean, immediately the Lord, you know, convicted me, and he said, you know, you are not mine, and you have no relationship with me whatsoever. And I just got down on my hands and knees before the Lord and just confessed everything. I called my mom and dad up on the phone and said, "Can I come talk with you?" And they said, "Sure, you can come talk to us." Because it was not, I mean, we did not talk. We didn't have anything to do with each other. And I stayed up all night, literally, with my parents until like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and just cried and asked for their forgiveness and said, "You know, I'm so sorry for disappointing you. I'm so sorry for hurting you. Please forgive me." And of course, I mean, they just said, "Yes, we forgive you." The Lord really built our relationship back together, and I just surrendered my life to the Lord at that point and just said, "Lord, whatever you want to do with me, I am yours. I will do whatever it is that you ask." So I was saved in October, and then in June, the Lord told me to quit my job and go to work in women's ministry. And I said, "Okay." So I went to the athletic director's office, I quit my job, and thought I was going to work in women's ministry. I had no idea what that would look like. I had listened to Nancy on the radio, and it was really interesting when she was talking about, you know, the feminist movement and how this message was not popular. I was like, well, I was one of those people, because if I had heard you 4 or 5 years ago, I would have taken my radio out of the car and would have thrown it on the side of the road. But it was just amazing. I would, that year after I came to the Lord, I would just listen and listen and listen to her. And it was just so amazing how I thought, you know, that's really true. So I'd go home and I would look up all the scriptures that she would talk about. And then I would look it up on the internet, and then I would listen the next day, and I'd go home, and I'd look up all this stuff and be like, you know, she really does know what she's talking about. You know, that really is true. And that was the thing, because it was truth. It wasn't her ideas, her thoughts, but it was truth that was proclaimed with boldness. And that's where the difference was. And that is why we're seeing the Lord use this ministry in such profound ways, because it's truth. It is truth that we can go back and we can stand on in the tough times. But it's been amazing what the Lord has done in my life, and to have watched what it has done and the ripples effect in my family, that has been amazing because, you know, their eyes have just been opened to see what the Lord has done in my own life. And I continue to pray that I would be a witness to others on the transforming power of the Lord, and that prayer does matter. It really does. Because 5 years ago, I would not be standing before you at all. I'm just so thankful for where the Lord has me and that he led me to such a wonderful ministry that proclaims his truth.
And what a powerful reminder of a couple things. First of all, that God really does change lives from the inside out. And it's easy to look around at the culture and how contrary it is running to the ways of God and think, well, those people out there would never embrace this message. They would never embrace the truth. They'll never respond to it. And to not have any hope. Well, as long as there's a redeeming God, there is hope. And Renee's testimony surely illustrates that. But also, what a powerful reminder to moms whose children are not walking with the Lord, or mates or whatever, that God is a prayer-hearing and prayer-answering God. And can I just say to some of you moms and grandmoms who cry yourself to sleep at night over a troubled or wayward son or daughter, grandchild, mate, don't stop praying. Don't stop praying. Don't stop asking God to get a hold of their heart, to transform their heart, to do what you can't do. And he really can. This thing of sexual identity is very deeply rooted in all of us. And it's shaped by a lot of things. But to see how God can rewire our thinking, our hearts, our bents, our inclinations, our affections. And, you know, Renee's really right when she said that person she was doesn't exist any longer. That is the old person. She is a new creation. And now being used by God's grace as an instrument of righteousness in the lives of other women. I mean, who could write that script other than God?
And I was just thinking of Renee's testimony. It says, 2 Corinthians 5:17, I'm sure most of you are familiar with. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has gone, the new has come. And Renee in French means rebirth. And it's really precious.
God has a special plan and design for you as a woman. Some of our listeners have been talking with Nancy Lee DeMoss about discovering that design and about living it out day by day. Nancy will be right back. She's going to give some advice to women who wonder if God's called them to write or speak like Nancy does. As you just heard, God teaches us to be true women day by day. Everyone has things to learn. Everyone has room to grow. As you draw closer to God and learn to live out biblical womanhood, I hope you'll get a copy of a book Nancy edited. It's called Becoming God's True Woman. Nancy wrote some of the chapters along with Mary Cassian, Susan Hunt, Carolyn Mahaney, and others. They'll show you how to honor God in uniquely feminine ways. You'll learn how to give God your relationships, how to develop true beauty, how to embrace God as your Father, and how to honor God through suffering. When you donate any amount to Revive Our Hearts, we'll say thanks by sending Becoming God's True Woman. Your donation will help allow us to provide this daily podcast. As you can imagine, there are a lot of costs associated with the production, bandwidth, and storage of the Revive Our Hearts podcast. When you make a donation at reviveourhearts.com, you'll get the helpful book. And you'll make sure this content continues coming to your computer or MP3 player day by day. Again, just donate any amount at reviveourhearts.com. We know that a lot of Revive Our Hearts listeners have a desire to communicate God's truth like Nancy does. We want to share some practical advice Nancy's learned as a best-selling author. You might be interested to know that as a podcast listener, you're getting a longer version of this segment than we had time to air on the radio today.
What are some tips that you can give to women who want to be writers one day?
Women who want to be writers one day. Well, let me just say, I was not a woman who wanted to be a writer. And
it's kind of funny. I still don't really think of myself as a writer. I guess I am, but I don't think of myself that way because writing is not something that's ever come easily for me. It's not something I've really aspired to, but it has been something that God is, as he's put a message in my heart and burned it there, like to where you have to communicate it. That's where writing has come for me. But I would just encourage you, especially if you're younger and want to get into writing, to do what you can to get the tools. You don't learn to write today by texting. You don't learn to write today on Facebook. You don't learn to write today on email. There are some basic tools that are skills, that are disciplines, practices. And unfortunately, today, even our schools are not teaching, in many cases, to some of the basics of good writing. So get all the training you can. Get all the skills you can. I have some friends who have daughters in their early 20s who would love to write, who are aspiring writers. I know these teenage girls who are writing like long novels, amazing things. I'm saying encourage that, but get all the training you can in terms of the techniques, the disciplines, the tools of the trade. And then there's some wonderful writers' conferences that are available. The thing that I could most recommend, and I'm standing here at Moody, is the Mr. Jenkins program called Christian Writers Guild, right? And they have a whole, depending how old you are, for teens they have one, for adults they have another, a whole online training that's available. It's not, you pay for it, but you get what you pay for. It's really good. And you get a mentor, you get somebody who will work with your writing, and I think those kinds of opportunities I would take. And then I realize that success in life is not measured by whether you publish or how many people read your books. It's measured by obeying God and doing what he wants you to do. And so maybe the Lord wants you to write for him, or for women in your church, or for friends. People ask about speaking, too. How could I develop a life as a speaker? And I'm saying, you know, in all those things, serve the Lord where you are. Use the opportunities he gives you. Take advantage of those. And then just see what doors God opens up to develop those skills and those areas. And my personal experience, I'm not saying it should be this way for everybody, but in my case, I have never sought after or aspired to the things that I'm doing in ministry, whether it's speaking or writing or leading a ministry. I just didn't set out to do any of those things. I set out to love the Lord, to know him, to know and love his word, and to serve in whatever ways would bring him the greatest glory. So I've done a lot of different things that are not very glamorous. A lot of things that are behind the scenes, a lot of things that, you know, I've spoken to many very small groups. And I found it was important in those years that I not be discontent with that, that I pour my heart into that as much if it was 10 people as if it was 10,000 people. And that I not measure success in ministry by how big it was or how famous I was, because with bigness and fame come also some other temptations and challenges that God knows if and when somebody is ready for that. And it's far easier to tank spiritually when you are in the limelight than it is when you're using those gifts in more obscurity. So don't put God to the test, I would say, and ask him for bigness in terms of scope of ministry. Serve wherever God has you, in your local church, in your dorm, on your hall, in your workplace. Ask God to open doors to serve and minister, whether it's in writing or speaking or musical abilities. And then let God open the doors and follow the direction he goes, and you'll find he will lead you on a journey that will be so rich and so right. And then remember, there are seasons. And there are things that gifts God may have given you as a young woman that he may not bring to full fruition until later in life when you've lived a little longer and had some more life experience. Now, that doesn't mean don't use those gifts when you're younger. It just means that God may unfold those gifts in a different and greater way, say after you've raised your children, for example, and you may be sitting there thinking, oh, these gifts are just going to waste. I think of my friend Barbara Rainey, whose husband, Dennis Rainey, you've heard on Family Life Today. They are the founders of Family Life Ministries. Barbara is an extremely talented woman. And she didn't just get those talents later in life. She had them when she was a younger woman, but she raised six children.
And she and Dennis were starting this ministry, and they had six children who were all within just several years of each other. She has been very focused on her family, as was right. Now she's an empty nester. And it's a different season of life. And there are all kinds of gifts that she's utilizing with art, with speaking, with writing. She didn't just develop those skills, but she's now using them in a different way than she did during the season when she was raising her family. And she's doing it with so much more richness and fullness and wisdom and life experience. When Barbara Rainey speaks, people listen because she's been there. And I'm not saying God can't and doesn't use young people. I taught my first Sunday school class when I was 8 years old and did a lot of things as a younger woman. I thank the Lord for those opportunities. But I also realize that there are ways that seasoning helps. And so don't be impatient with that process. Okay, that's probably more than you asked, but hope that's a little bit of encouragement for you.